Welcome to the Opawa Baptist Podcast. If you'd like to find out more about our church, visit us on any Sunday or online at opawa.org.nz.
Are not you my workmanship in the Lord? Should be on a slide there actually, Chris. If to others I am not an apostle, at least I am to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord. This is my defence to those who would examine me. Do we not have the right to our food and drink? Do we not have the right to be accompanied by a wife, as the other apostles and the brothers of the Lord and Cephas? Or is it only Barnabas and I who have no right to refrain from working for a living? Who serves as a soldier at his own expense? Who plants a vineyard without eating any of its fruit? Who tends a flock without getting some of the milk? Do I say this on human authority? Does not the law say the same? For it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle an ox when it is treading out the grain. Is it for oxen that God is concerned? Does he not speak entirely for our sake? It was written for our sake, because the ploughman should plough in hope, and the thresher thresh in hope of a share in the crop. If we have sown spiritual good among you, is it too much if we reap your material benefits? If others share this rightful claim upon you, do not we still more? Nevertheless, we have not made use of this right, but we endure anything rather than put an obstacle in the way of the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that those who are employed in the temple service get their food from the temple? And those who serve at the altar share in the sacrificial offerings? In the same way, the Lord commanded that those who proclaim the gospel should get their living by the gospel. But I have made no use of any of these rights, nor am I writing this to secure any such provision, for I would rather die than have anyone deprive me of my ground for boasting. For if I preach the gospel, that gives me no ground for boasting, for necessity is laid upon me. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel, for if I do this of my own will, I have a reward, but if not of my own will, I am entrusted with a commission. What then is my reward? Just this, that in my preaching I may make the gospel free of charge, not making full use of my right in the gospel. Many years ago, I was friendly with a family who lived on a farm. Their two daughters had been to a local country primary school, and then they attended a small rural high school. And when the older daughter was about to start her final year at high school, the family moved to a large town, and she attended a much larger local high school. She excelled at every subject. She got straight A's, and her parents were pretty pleased with her. But one local family was not pleased with her academic achievements. They had a son who was also in his final year at high school. He had won the top academic prize in the equivalent of year 9, year 10, year 11, and year 12. So he was on track to be the top academic achiever in year 13 and rightfully claim the prize of school ducks. The only thing standing in his way was this young lady, a relative newcomer to the school, who appeared to be a threat to this goal. The parents of the boy thought it was his right to be the ducks, even if the girl outscored him. All through the year, the boy was the top scorer in two subjects that the girl didn't take. And the girl was top scorer in two subjects that the boy didn't take. But in their common three subjects, they were neck and neck. The parents of the boy had friends on the school board. But to their credit, the members of the school board couldn't agree that he should be the ducks no matter what the result of the final exams was. But no one on the board wanted to face the possibility that the girl might outscore him. She might pip him at the post and deprive him of his apparent right to claim the crown of ducks. There was a lot of tension. It got closer and closer to the final exams. And luckily for all concerned, the situation was resolved fairly when someone had the bright idea of crowning a boy ducks and a girl ducks for the first time in the school's history. And every year since, as far as I know, that high school has had a boy ducks and a girl ducks. To this day, I don't think anyone other than the school board members know who actually got the higher total score. Rights, what a tricky topic given to me by this man in the front row. In the previous chapter of 1 Corinthians chapter 8, Paul makes a distinction between eating food in your own home, eating food in the home of an unbeliever, and dining out at a pagan temple. From evidence dug up at archaeological sites, it's been deduced that dining out at the temple was a common social convention for everyone, except probably for slaves. But it sounded like Paul realised that some of the apostles had doubts about the nature of the food they were eating and the implications of whether or not they followed the right customs. Some Christians had already accepted invitations to dine out at pagan temples in full view of the public, and Paul was warning them of the dangers of leading those with a weak conscience into abandoning these sorts of activities that matched their convictions. Basically, the Christians were just doing as they pleased without any regard to how it might be affecting those around them. And Paul took issue with that. So it's in the light of writing to these Christians in Corinth about their actions and behaviour that Paul launches into all these questions about his rights as an apostle. He's not actually expecting an answer. They're rhetorical questions. He's simply re-establishing his authority by reminding them that he personally encountered the risen Lord, and because of that, he began preaching the gospel, which resulted in bringing the Corinthian church into existence. Paul is definitely writing this to assert his rights as an apostle. He's reminding the Corinthians that he has a right to be provided with food and drink and financial support from those he shared the gospel with. He gives the example of soldiers serving their country. They serve willingly, but it's not at their own expense. My own son Andrew looks very handsome in his army uniform, but I can assure you that he did not purchase it himself. Paul gives further examples of those who plant crops or tend livestock. They have a recognised right to share in the produce. Paul hasn't just made this up. He refers back to the law of Moses, which speaks in Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse 4, about the rights of oxen to avoid being muzzled when they're working so they can eat as they work. Paul draws the conclusion that if God cares so much about the welfare of animals in providing legislation for their basic needs, then surely he applies the same principle to those who work on his behalf to spread the good news of the gospel. Paul has rights, and he knows what those rights are. Next slide. In verse 14, he tells us that those who proclaim the gospel have a right to make their living by it. So you do need to pay Rod happily each week, since that is his job. But there's no charge for me this morning because I work elsewhere. But the main point that Paul is making is that he's made no use of his rights. He's supported himself by making tents. It's not because he's not entitled to support. It's because he's decided to avoid any hindrance to the reception of the gospel. I'll read those verses in 1 Corinthians 9:14. Though I'm free from all men, I've made myself a slave to all, that I might win the more. To the Jews I became as a Jew, in order to win Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, not being without law toward God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. I've become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. Paul wants to make a boast to his opponents of a ministry that's only dependent on him being compelled to preach without a reward. He wants them to realize that the gospel is free of charge and that he's serving them unselfishly. He didn't want it said that he preferred his wages to his work. That's because Paul was much more interested in relationships than rights. Next slide. Paul's entire ministry was founded on relationships. Establishing relationships with the sole purpose of sharing the gospel was the main focus of his life. Paul was happy to deny himself his rights if it meant he could serve the Lord and save souls. It's worth reflecting on the fact that much of our work has financial reward, but maybe the only real reward comes from God, from our willing service to him. If we leave the heart out of our duties, if we go through the motions without the loving relationships behind them, we're left with a carcass of religion, but not the heart of the gospel. Because Paul had relationships at the centre of his ministry, he became very adaptable. I think this is where I'm meant to read the next bit on 1 Corinthians. Okay, here we go. I'm free from all men. I've made myself a slave to all that I might win the more. He became as a Jew in order to win Jews. He became weak to win those who were weak. Paul was a Roman citizen, a free man. He became a servant so that others could be set free. And verse 23 shows us his motive. It was all for the sake of the gospel. Anyone filled with devotion for the Lord, acting with enthusiasm for the salvation of others, will not insist upon rights and privileges. Paul had a goal in view, the glorious prize of an eternity spent with Christ. Next slide, verses 24 to 27. Do you not know that in a race all the runners compete, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Well, I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I pommel my body and subdue it, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. We're in the middle of the Olympic Games. It's a glorious contest. None of those athletes have got there by a half-hearted approach to their training. They've worked and trained and sweated and competed with the sole focus of getting to the top of their sport to be eligible to compete at the Olympic Games. They've exercised incredible discipline and self-control with their diet and training schedules. Their aim is to win the gold medal and receive the glory. In a year's time, no one will remember who got fourth place, except the person who got fourth and watched the other three on the podium ahead of them getting their medals. But Paul said that athletic glory is only momentary. In his day, those who conquered in the games were crowned with leaves of laurel or bay leaves that promptly withered. Paul says our reward is imperishable. So his conclusion is that we can't just live aimlessly. We have to have a purpose, and we have to make sure that we run to receive the prize. And unlike the Olympic Games, every runner who finishes this race will receive a prize. We need to be responsible to compete in the race, to compete well, to complete it, and to stick to the rules. Next slide. With rights come responsibilities. They're closely connected. We can't insist on our rights without taking into account our responsibilities, or the world is going to be a very unpleasant place to live. Now, I may believe that I have a right to drive my car at 120 kilometres an hour in a 100k zone if I'm running late for an important appointment. But the trouble is that no one else would agree that was a valid right. I don't have the law on my side, and I would expect to face some unpleasant consequences. It would put lives at unnecessary risk. I have a responsibility to other road users. It is not my right to do as I please on the roads. But what happens when I have the valid right to drive at 100 kilometres an hour in a 100k zone and I can't because the roads are icy and the traffic's heavy and I'm stuck behind a caravan I can't pass? Do you get the feeling this has happened to me? I'm forced to go a whole lot slower than I'm rightfully entitled. Yes, there are occasions when our responsibilities override our rights. So Paul's example that we read before at the end of chapter 8 regarding doing things that might make our Christian brothers stumble mean that we cannot ever insist on our rights without taking into account our responsibilities to others. We have a responsibility to live as redeemed people, being careful not to cause others to sin, and therefore being doubly careful to avoid sin ourselves. There is a prize at stake. We need to compete according to the rules. We have rights, but they're tied up with responsibilities. They're tied up with relationships. They carry huge responsibility. If you remember nothing else from today, remember how effective the ministry of Paul was because he put relationships at the centre of all he did. He took his responsibility to share the gospel seriously, and he waived his rights so that others would learn to trust in Jesus and receive the ultimate prize. May God help us to do the same for his glory. Amen.